Chapter 14. Carter. I wrap my hands around my mug of coffee and stare at the only line I've written in my journal this morning. Emma was right. In the light of day, I'm glad she didn't accept my out-of-character, spur-of-the-moment suggestion to turn the other night into a date. Not that I didn't have fun with her, or think she looked beautiful, or wonder what it would have been like to kiss her goodnight at her car. I did all those things. But I also have to keep working with her. I can't recuse myself from the final discussion at the museum. They asked me to be a voice for the artists, and I've already shirked that duty once because of Emma. Still, I want to see her. I want to hear more of her observations. Never would I have thought to wonder if the parents took the child who'd played an early version of the plant home during intermission, so he wouldn't see what his character became at the end. Since we saw the kid in the lobby after the show stuffing his face with popcorn and watching a cartoon on his tablet, I'm going to assume he's doing okay either way. Despite the musings, I'm in my studio by my normal time. I prep 3 canvases for color studies, but when I go to select some sketches, I run into the same problem I've had since meeting Emma. I have too many ideas, and I don't know which to do first. It's been so long since I experienced such a flood of inspiration that I don't know how to handle it anymore. 30 minutes later, I scoop up the sketchbook and head for the door. If I'm struggling with a buzz like I felt when I first started out, I might as well return to the solutions from that time as well. Frank is helping a customer when I enter the gallery, so I stroll around looking at the art while I wait. Some of Richie's paintings remain, but they are no longer gathered together in the front section of the gallery. I wander around, taking note of which items have been on the walls for a while. Some of the pieces will stay because Frank just likes them, others because he has a good relationship with the artist, and a few because they might be of interest to his regulars that only come by a couple of times a year when their travels bring them to town. Frank finds me staring at a cubist-style painting of a person at a desk in an office.
"Looking for a new piece? That's not your usual taste."
I shake my head. There is, of course, quite a bit of art hanging in my home, but each piece was carefully chosen because of how much I like it, and I've no intention of taking any of them down anytime soon. Still, I nod at the painting. "Who do you think's going to buy that piece?" Frank turns to consider the painting before looking at me with his eyebrows raised.
"I don't know. Bob? Sue? Ricardo? Anyone on my client list that might want this piece has long since been contacted."
Yet it's still here. What type of person would buy it? He turns to study the picture with me.
"I always saw it going into a workplace, maybe a reception area, or even a corner office somewhere. It doesn't really scream home office, but..."
Frank shrugs. Would this type of game work with Emma? Should I take her to a museum or a gallery and ask her what type of person she could see buying the work or where she could see it hanging? It might give her a reason to connect with the piece in a different way.
"You got a piece in the car you need me to ship?"
"What?" It takes me a moment to grasp the question Frank asked.
"Oh, no, nothing yet." "Didn't think so. We just sent some pieces a couple weeks ago."
Frank nods toward the door to the office section of the gallery.
"Want a tea? Coffee? Truth serum?"
I pause in the act of reaching for the door.
"Truth serum? I don't know, man. You're the one looming around all mysterious and not talking. I deal with artistic eccentricities better than most, but this isn't your usual bag of tricks."
"I'm not eccentric." I roll my eyes as I open the door and walk through it.
"You keep telling yourself that."
The office area isn't as quiet as it was that night with Emma, but it's more the buzz of electronics and potential than actual people. Other than Frank and me, the only other person is his office manager, sitting at her desk near the reception area, typing an email. We both get a cup of coffee from the machine and retreat to Frank's office. I take one of the chairs in front of his desk, and he takes the other.
"To what do I owe the pleasure?"
he asks. "You're pushy today. Trying to get rid of me?"
"Trying to get back to work."
I forget sometimes that other people have hours in which they can find their jobs. While I have hours in which I normally work, my schedule is flexible if the need arises. Like today. Right now, I should be painting, but since I don't know what to paint, I'm here. I set the coffee on the desk, several inches from the edge, and pull out my sketchbook. Frank's eyes light up as he too sets his coffee down well out of the possible range of being knocked onto the drawings.
"Please tell me you're here to get help with a selection and not because you can't draw anything but stick figures anymore."
My grin escapes before I can even think of pranking my friend. "Selection." He sticks out his hand and wiggles his fingers in a "come here" sort of gesture. I hand the book over. It doesn't take him long to flip past the first few drawings. They're old, partially completed perspective ideas. The moment he gets to the new stuff is obvious because everything in him, even his breathing, slows. With near reverence, he turns the pages until he gets to the blank ones. He closes the book and stabs the cover with his index finger.
"You have no idea how happy I am to see this."
I retrieve the book and start flipping through the pages again myself, trying to give them a critical eye. "Why? It's not like you get a commission off my shipments."
"Because it means you're living again."
I look up to meet Frank's serious, pointed gaze.
"I wasn't aware I was dead." "There are a lot of kinds of dead. Only one involves a funeral."
"Presumably not the one I've been suffering from." He shrugs.
"You're still here, so guess not."
Standing, he takes our coffees and puts them on a small table on the other side of the room before taking the book from me and opening it flat on the desk surface. Then he presses his palms to the desk and looks at the book.
"You live through your art. Always have. Those first years, I could even tell by the illustrations you did for those books. If things were going well, you used rounder shapes and brighter colors. During the bad times, there were sharp corners and heavy shadows."
I wince. It's a wonder I kept a job with that kind of inconsistency.
"Probably not recognizable to the untrained eye," Frank shrugs. "I'm not untrained."
"That's why I'm here. Which should I paint?" He drops into the chair behind his desk and folds his hands over his stomach.
"Which do you want to paint?"
"If I knew that, I wouldn't be here."
"Look."
Frank flips to the first drawing in the notebook. A piano. Not even from a very interesting angle.
"See this?"
I think it's a rhetorical question since I'm staring right at it, but when he doesn't speak again, I give a hesitant,
"Yes?" "It's flat."
"When your work's flat, you're flat, and you've been living flat for a while.
Ghosting through life even at church. Just going through the motions."
"A non-funeral sort of dead?" He points at me.
"Bingo."
I sit back in my chair. He's not wrong. I thought something along those lines that first night I started spitting out sketches after meeting Emma. To have him see the same things is more than a little disturbing.
"Well, I'm not flat now." "No, you are not."
Frank flips to one of my uncompleted sketches.
"This has the potential to be your best work in years, maybe ever."
"What inspired it?" I open my mouth to tell him about Emma, but nothing comes out. Not because I want to hide her, but because he would ask questions I don't know the answer to. Or worse, questions I do know the answers to, but don't want to admit. "I've been people watching," I say.
"People are interesting."
The slow way he says it indicates he knows I'm lying.
"Person watching is good too."
No way am I going to acknowledge that one. We get to business, discussing the merits and saleability of the different ideas, finally narrowing it down to 4 for me to put in my work rotation. As I close the book and slide it back into my bag, Frank stands.
"A word of advice?
Can I stop you?" He gives it a thought.
"Nope."
He grins.
"When you get to prepping those canvases, if one of those other ideas calls to you, answer. There's not a bad trick in the stack. I haven't seen you produce a book like that since you first got started. Whatever's brought the spark back into your life, I'll be praying you figure out how to keep it."
I pick up Emma for our second lesson. It's hard not to call it a second date, no matter how much I remind myself it's not. Last night, after I caught myself thinking of it as a date for the 5th time, I sat down and tried to come up with someone to ask out on a real date. If I had a real date to think about, I wouldn't keep trying to make this into one. Frank's words have haunted me until I have to admit their truth. My life has been flat, which means my relationships have been flat, which means there's not a single girl of my acquaintance that I want to take to dinner. Yet I'm picking up Emma and taking her downtown to the Lowell Museum of Fine Art, an excursion that will require us to spend far more time together than a simple little meal. The first 20 minutes of the ride are silent as we slip into thicker and thicker traffic until we're slowly creeping along toward our downtown exit.
"Do you get to come down here often?"
I cringe inwardly as I ask the question. I sound like I think I'm doing her a favor.
"Not anymore. I went to college down here, though."
She points out the window to the Georgia Tech dorms lining the interstate.
"Right there."
"Not an easy school."
"No, but I enjoyed it."
Another layer of Emma Trinket. Was she a nerdy brainiac? Was everything cold numbers and calculations? Was that why art didn't make sense to her? What did you study?
"Computer science, with a focus on models and simulations."
Yep, definitely sounded nerdy. "Models and simulations?" She laughs.
"I know what you're thinking, but it's not the same."
I take an exit and guide the car toward the museum. What am I thinking?
"That simulations are virtual art?"
"Well, aren't they?" I grin at her. Part of me is curious about her answer because it really seems like they should be connected. Most of me just likes the idea of seeing her get passionate about something.
"No, it's more about creating a virtual version of a real thing."
"That's what I do." Her mouth opens and shuts before she sits back in her seat, arms crossed.
"Well, it must be different. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing this trip today."
And wouldn't that be a shame? We pull into the museum's parking garage, and a few minutes later, we're standing before a painting.
"Okay?"
Emma straightens her shoulders and looks at the painting, steadily moving her eyes from one side to the other and from the top to the bottom.
"Tell me about it."
No, the objective here is for you to tell me about it. She frowns at me.
"But you wouldn't let me get a guidebook."
Using one finger, I gently push her face back toward the painting. "This isn't about the guidebook. It's about the art. What do you see?" She looks at it, and if I had to guess, she's really trying to give the picture her full consideration. Her shoulders lift as she takes a deep breath.
"I see a sad woman."
"Well, that's a start. The painting is called La Mélancolie."
"So she's a sad French woman."
I resist the urge to laugh. "What do you feel when you look at her?" After a few moments, Emma decisively answers,
"Bored."
I stand behind her and look at the painting over her shoulder. Almost immediately, a sense of pity for the poor woman engulfs me. She looks like she's lost absolutely everything in life. Do you have trouble with empathy? She turns around, eyebrows high, clearly shocked at my question. I can't say that I blame her.
For real people? I don't think so. For fictitious paintings where the artist isn't even still alive, yes.
Fine. We'll look at it differently. She gives me a nod of consideration. What type of person do you see buying this painting? Her answer this time is immediate.
A sad one.
Why?
Because, in my experience, some sad people like to surround themselves with things that make the sad feel normal. Like sad movies and sad music. I assume sad art would be the same.
I have never considered it like that, but I suppose it's true. As I guide her toward the next painting, we continue talking. Is the same true for happy people? Happy movies, happy music? She tilts her head as she thinks, and it makes her hair slide across her shoulder. Not that I should be noticing her hair, or talking about anything other than art. But Frank did say to keep whatever had caused that spark around, so maybe I should rethink my stance. My skill for finding excuses to do what I already want to do is growing daily. I redirect her attention to the art. This is one of my favorite paintings.
Really?
She looks from me to the painting and back again.
But it's so not detailed.
It's expressionist.
If you say so.
I grin and tell her the basics of art movements throughout history. This actually seems to interest her, but it isn't the point of this lesson. Look at this. Tell me what you see.
I'm assuming you want something other than a pool table, chairs, and several random people.
We'll just focus on the random people for now. She squints at the painting.
I think most of them should be at home and not in a pool hall. And no, before you ask, I don't feel the need to make sure they get there safely.
I laugh. You aren't far off. This was a cafe known for being a hangout for less reputable people. People who might be better off sleeping at a table in a cafe instead of at home.
See? These are things I would know if you'd let me get the guidebook.
We fall silent as I look at the painting. It's been a while since I came down here to see it.
You really like this painting, don't you?
She asks quietly. I break my concentration and turn to see her standing a few feet away, observing me instead of the art. How long have I been standing here? I nod. It's one of those paintings that tells a story. It makes you wonder. You itch to go behind the curtain, to know if that man is going to help the drunk at the table or steal his wallet. Is that a couple at the table in the back or another person sleeping?
You know, they probably sell prints of this in the gift shop.
It's not the same. I shake my head and point at the painting. A print won't have the colors and textures. It will never get the same depth of color. See, stand here. I position her in front of me, hands on her shoulders. Doesn't the light appear to be moving? Can't you see it shining through the room?
No.
My sigh ruffles her hair, and the scent of her shampoo distracts me from the painting. I cough lightly and step away. Anyway, what sort of person do you think would purchase a painting like this?
You, apparently.
I'm saved from answering by a 3-tone alarm from my phone. She stares at my phone as I pull it from my pocket.
You have the sound on?
Only for certain notifications. I put in my code and open the phone. Sure enough, there's an error notification from the environmental control system at my home. I go into the app, but it's not an error I recognize, nor one that I appear able to fix. All I can tell is that it has to do with the humidity in my studio. My apologies, but I have to cut this short. She almost jumps toward the exit.
As delighted as I am to be leaving the art museum early, is something wrong?
Maybe, I frown. There's a system in my home that controls the humidity in my studio.
I can see where that would be important.
We return to the car, and I put both of our homes in the map system. Unfortunately, there's a wreck causing enough traffic to make taking Emma home first add almost an hour to my trip. She reaches over and hits the X next to her address.
Let's go take care of your system first. I can always call a friend or get an Uber if I need to.
Are you sure?
Absolutely.
Grateful, I set off, and soon we're zipping back up the interstate we recently crawled down.
Did you know that studies have shown actually knowing about the art does not have an impact on your enjoyment of it?
I send a quick glance in Emma's direction. What?
Art experts and novices tend to rank the emotional impact of art similarly, even though the novices don't have any idea which paintings are theoretically better done.
Did you look that up for tonight or something?
I heard it on a podcast.
She frowns and angles her body to face mine in the car.
Do you think that means there's something wrong with me? Because I would rank the emotional impact as nothing?
I still maintain you're just experiencing the wrong art or looking at the wrong aspects. She sighs and faces forward again.
If you say so. You are, after all, the expert here.
And yet somehow, I feel like a complete novice.